Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to episode 7 of Hometown Glory, your Spurs and culture podcast. I'm Charlie, and I am addicted to watching Antonio Conte bear hug terrified players of Tottenham Hotspur. Tonight we've got Billy, we've got Tom, and guys, we had some shots on target and we won a Premier League match. Now, as is customary on Hometown Glory, I want one thing that you enjoyed from the Leeds game, and I want one thing that annoyed you. Tom, you can start us off, please.
At halftime, I was just more furious than I've ever been, I think, at a Spurs game.
Ever?
Potentially, yeah, because I was sort of just ranting to anyone who would listen in the sort of concourse in the South Stand. I was just so furious. Like, obviously, the Leeds goal happened just before halftime. And I thought, The first half, we were just so bad. The centre mids and the fullbacks, I thought, were particularly infuriating. There was that, if we're talking an individual moment that most enraged me, when Emerson passed the ball out for a corner on the right-hand side, right next to the South Stand. That was an awful individual error. And I guess generally we saw like the best of some of our players in the second half, and the very, very worst of our players. Højbjerg, that first half was his worst half of football since he joined the club, I think. Not helped by being next to Winks, which is maybe a bit harsh, but they were both so bad in that first half. And then the irony was that Højbjerg scored the first goal, and also Reguilón, who was pretty terrible in that first half as well, then obviously got the second. And again, in terms of the worst and the best, Lucas lost that ball so many times in that first half. He was so infuriating. And then he made both the goals and arguably did more than Son or Kane. So those are my initial thoughts anyway. But yeah, if you caught me at halftime, I was ranting at anyone who'd listen that those players had been terrible under 4 or 5 managers. And then, yeah, the most joyous bit was immediately in that second half, Kane hit the post and then Son hit the bar very soon after, right? And we were just jumping around going, we've had some shots.
It really was such a low bar to be entertained when that second half kicked off. I mean, I too was completely despondent at halftime. I sit very near Rosa and I sort of tried to be positive, and she sort of very calmly told me to, you know, just calm down. This isn't a game we're going to win. And I don't think anyone at halftime felt otherwise. I think we were so terrible. We were so listless and being outworked and outpassed. And you know, I think we were all sort of telling ourselves all those sensible things like, you know, this is going to be a long process. Conte is not going to come in and work miracles. These players are, you know, by and large, these are just not good footballers. They can't pass. They can't do anything. And then, you know, I think we saw what Conte will bring to this team short term, which is that shot in the arm of, you know, passion and energy and impetus that we saw in the second half. Billy, what first half thoughts? Were you as kind of despondent as the rest of us?
Yeah, I was, because I think I just read today that was six halves in a row that I shot on target, and that's a Premier League record, which is crazy when you think about it. Like six whole consecutive halves of Premier League football without a shot on target is crazy. And I just thought they were better us all over the pitch, like man for man, outrunning us. Like they were just passing it around like a training exercise at times, Leeds were. I think considering they had, you know, when everyone saw the Leeds team, we were thinking, right, you have to thrash them here. They've literally got half their team out. They've got all their best players injured, other than Calvin Phillips. And yeah, it was just really, really disappointing. But then I think, like, my favourite thing about everything is I think it kind of like sums up what we hope Ante Conte will bring, because like when we hired Mourinho, we were sort of expecting him to take us to the next level and teach us how to be winners, and we didn't really ever get it. I feel like with Conte, like he was at every level, was like lifting us, including the fans, including the crowd. And it's like, it just feels like this is the guy who's going to get us over the line. This is the guy who's going to get us a win, because he knows what he's doing. And that second half, like when you imagine what we might play like under Conte, that's everything that we'd expect. Like the ridiculous intensity. I think we had 11 shots in the second half, which is unbelievable. With the second team of the season to outrun Leeds. So only one other team has done that, which when you consider a few weeks ago under Nuno, we were literally at the bottom of the league for kilometres running the game. It's unbelievable. So I think if you could kind of like capture what we hope Conte is going to do, you'd have that terrible first half and sort of signifying when he took over us and we're in a bad position and sort of lifting us with the second half. When he was sort of G'ing up the crowd, it just felt unbelievable. Like, everyone around me was just going mad. This is what we wanted to see for Conte.
I think I genuinely missed a couple of key moments of the game because I was busy watching Conte gesticulate. The way he kind of lives every move of the game. And someone was telling me that Fabregas had said that at Chelsea he gave sort of... Fabregas by that point had won everything, and Conte came in and tried to give Fabregas like very specific instructions about what he should be doing. And apparently it didn't go down that well. But my thought with that was these players need very specific instructions. They've been so terrible for so long. I want him bollocking them every time they do something wrong and telling them precisely where to put passes.
This is why it just feels like there just isn't a manager in world football better suited to this job. And I feel like, you know, you mentioned Fabregas there, Tom, and he'd won everything, probably not going to take too kindly to being told which 5 yards, you know, square pass he needs to play at any given second. Our best players, however, you know, if you think about the superstars of our team in Kane and Son, they feel like they're the sort of sponges that want to learn. They are desperate to win something. You know, they embrace Mourinho's methods perhaps more than any other two players at the club. Even our superstars feel like they're so ready to take on this winner's mentality, to, you know, just learn everything this guy's got to offer, that it feels really spot on.
Yeah, and I do feel like it's not just the players that need this. I think us as a fan base, we need it as well. And I think you start to see yesterday, Conte is going to change us at every single level. Like, you know, there were times in that first half where the atmosphere was absolutely terrible. Like, you'd think, considering it was Conte's first game, I thought it was going to be buzzing for the whole game. But I think he kind of realised that. And if you notice, almost every single one of the players after the game mentioned the atmosphere, it makes such a big difference. We never really saw that until Conte started G'ing it up. So I think he knows what we need to do, not just on terms of the playing staff, but he's going to lift our club at every single level. And it's a really, really exciting thing.
I kind of enjoyed being told off by him. My a good friend of the podcast, Kath, who sits very near where I sit and where Rosa sits in the stadium, I think she tweeted afterwards about how much she also enjoyed sort of having her knuckles wrapped by Conte when, you know, I think it was, 87, 88 minutes, where we just needed that last push, and he was really giving it the full sort of come on, let's hear you sort of gesticulations. And you're completely right that we need to ensure that the players feel it. It's bizarre to think about, you know, considering how long the stadium has been open now, but because of the pandemic, because of, you know, the fact that we moved in halfway through a season, we saw the sort of fag end of the Poch era, we saw the, you know, unsteady beginning of the Mourinho era, and then Nuno's mini reign. We've not had a period of time in that stadium where we've played, you know, good football, we've been in the ascendancy in literally a handful of matches. So the idea that, I think like you say, Billy, that he might come in and change everything from the crowd up is really exciting.
And that actually leads me nicely on to the thing which annoyed me, which is, I don't know if you saw the video after the game, it's like Stephen Bergwijn was really annoyed. It's like, this is the manager who's just come in. He's one of the top five managers in world football. He's an elite coach. And you're like annoyed at him for not picking you. It's like, this is, and I think it's this kind of attitude which has been holding us back for the last 2 years. Like, what right does Stephen Bergwijn have to be annoyed at Conte for not playing him? It's like, you know, this man, we need to learn from this man. We need to, you know, give everything to him. And after two games of not playing, he's already sort of, you can see that attitude. And it's maybe not something which you can totally read into and know everything about it, but it was just a little bit disappointing to see that kind of annoyed me about Stephen Bergwijn. So that was my thing that annoyed me.
Just to say, in that first half as well, I did go in absolutely furious. But as you said, as you were saying, Leeds were really good in that first half. And watching back, the, you know, after the sort of passion of the game had subsided, watching Match of the Day 2 this morning, Calvin Phillips was just incredible in that first half. And obviously, I would take him in a heartbeat. He was so, so good.
I said, I think I said on Twitter, it's really weird when you see a player come to your stadium and that player is exactly the sort of player that your team is missing. And I feel like if you plonked him into our midfield, we would instantly go up a couple of levels. And we, you know, I agree with what you were saying, Tom, earlier about, you know, Winks and Højbjerg both lifted it second half. But I still think there's such a glaring lack of control that we have in midfield and an inability to just, you know, keep things moving, keep the ball moving, keep possession, you know, make teams work for it, find little triangles. It all felt so harum-scarum, even in the second half, I think, when we stepped it up. It was all, you know, the passes were like only just making it to people, and it all just felt like, you know, every single move could collapse at any point, but we just about pulled it off. Tom, what was your, moving on to pluses, what was the thing you enjoyed most?
Well, like I said, the moment I was most buzzing was just when we finally had those first couple of shots in that second half. But, do you know, I enjoyed Kane not taking the free kick. I was so chuffed when Dyer stepped up to take it. And I know, you know, there was that weird moment for England where we'd never seen him take a free kick for Spurs and he smashed it in for England. And now it's like, well, we've got to try someone else at the free kicks because Kane just hits the wall every time. And again, it was only when I watched the highlights back that I realised it did take quite a deflection. And good on Reguilon for being in that amazing position. I was chuffed that Kane didn't take that. So that was one of my bright spots. And again, like I said earlier, Lucas, who we could play, there's a couple of bits we could play into this podcast every week at the moment. And it's the bit where we say that Lucas did amazing things and also terrible things. And he made both those goals and looked as bright as Kane and Son, certainly. And the other bit we could play into every podcast as well is the bit where we just say how good Hugo Lloris is, because he also made a couple of, you know, we should have scored a couple more in that second half, but he made a couple of brilliant saves to keep us in it. And he's, you know, he is sort of underappreciated, really, because he is the consummate professional. And I guess at half time, after that first half, I was saying they can all go apart from Lloris. And also my pro is that I've realised, Billy, is that it's so much better to just bomb it down to the goal line, the long bar from our seats. I always moan about not being able to get Neco. It's like literally Amstel or Guinness in a can. But if we leave bang on half time and run down to the bottom there, it's fine.
And the goal bar is like a weird human psychology experiment because everyone queues in the middle when there's no queue on the side.
And we've just where the loos are on the left-hand side, yeah. Like that no one's
empty
there
all the time. It's like, and how also, stupid can people be?
That bar, there are so many staff, whereas the little bars by the seats, there's like two kids so confused about what they're meant to be doing.
the goal line bar is so surreal. It's like, how do people not just realize you literally just have to go to the left like 1 meter and there's a star half? Yeah, and I think on that Lucas thing as well, I'm pretty sure that he was the one who put the ball in for both the chances to hit the post and the bar for Kaden Son. So considering that, and the, you know, he won the free kick for the goal, he assisted the first goal. There were times when we were sort of fizzing the ball into him and his touch was terrible, but I think in general, like, most of the good things, well, in fact, if you look at it like that, all of the good things that we did came through Lucas at some point. So yeah, I think he had a, you know, a typical Lucas game, if there ever was one. Also, that first goal that we scored kind of gave me a bit of Ajax vibes when he sort of had his back to the keeper and put it on a plate for Højbjerg. That was kind of like his second goal at Ajax, so nice little memory there.
I was going to say, I think it was tough in particularly the first half, because our, you know, it felt like our path to starting any sort of attack basically involved the ball being whipped into him so ferociously with a defender right on his back constantly. And, you know, obviously Lucas's first touch can be very hit and miss, but we definitely weren't making it easy for him at all to sort of turn and run. It's weird, isn't it? It's not often with Lucas' performances until you actually sit and work out how much good his sort of persistent running did cause and create that you realise sort of his worth to the team. And he works his socks off. He really does.
And as Billy just hinted at as well, that the assist for the first goal was pretty brilliant. The position that he was in to play a pass back with his back to goal in such a calm manner to pick out Højbjerg. Am I right in thinking Højbjerg's now our joint top scorer or our top scorer for the season?
I think he must be joint. He's got three joint in the Premier League, is it? And then he's got three overall, which is probably, you know, if you take away Kane in the Conference League, that must be our second top scorer overall.
I think, I saw he scored as many goals for us now as he managed for Southampton in like three times the amount of games or something for them. He's one that splits opinion, clearly. I feel like I'm almost too nervous to ever mention his name on Twitter now, because I feel like he sparks all sorts of debate. But I think my highlight from the game was just studying Conte's hugs at the end and seeing which players were really going for it in return and which players looked absolutely like sort of mortified / terrified of him. And I think you can tell the ones that have really bought into him and he trusts, perhaps. And I think Højbjerg is right up there. He gave Højbjerg what seemed like a very special big hug. Dyer as well, who I think, if I'm going to call out my sort of positive in-game, I think it's probably Eric Dyer's performance, actually. I think this is, you know, I think after Everton as well, I thought he was very good. I think he seems to be one of the main sort of winners so far from the early Conte games. And I enjoyed the fact that he, you know, quite right for someone who used to play defensive midfield for England in major tournaments, has sort of almost remembered that he can dribble with the ball a little bit and he can bring it out and doesn't have to just constantly do those chips forward that seemed to be the Nuno instruction. And I thought we were building from the back a lot better through him.
Yeah, I thought that was his best game for a long time. And I think in the wake of Romero being injured, it couldn't be coming at a better time. I thought he was sort of quite a creative outlet for it most of the time. I think it was a shame at times when he had the ball, like no one was moving for him, especially in the first half. So, what, you know, like players like Son and Moore, who were so good at making those runs, just weren't doing it. And like, that was kind of frustrating at times, but it wasn't on Dyer. And I also think on that note, thinking about the Romero injury, I know we were talking last week about Tanganga, who I did think struggled quite badly most of the game. I thought what was brilliant was when Sanchez came on. I thought he was outstanding for the small cameo that he had. And I would guess in that he's going to start against Burnley now. He's probably done enough in that cameo to claim his place. So, yeah, I think, you know, we're kind of worrying what life might be like without Romero. And it looks like we might have to wait for a little bit longer until we know how long it's going to be. I think now it looks like Sanchez might have just wrestled a spot from Tanganga. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few games.
I thought those subs were really interesting as well. I think, you know, because Sanchez came on just before the free kick was being taken, I think, for the winner. And, you know, there was a lot of sort of confused looks in our block as to, you know, oh, is Tanganga injured? Or, you know, why are we making this sub when we need a goal? But I think, you know, looking back, Billy's right, Tanganga did struggle. I think Harrison had an excellent game and they were playing that diagonal ball across, and Tanganga, for whatever reason, just didn't seem to be winning anything in the air at all. And then suddenly Dav comes in and is just like cleaning house in the air. Every single chip ball they played up, that sort of route to goal for them just completely dried up.
I think it's a really interesting like sensation as well when Conte's bringing on these subs. Like, if you imagine in exactly the same scenario, Nuno is making those subs, like, everyone would be going absolutely crazy off the wall, booing all sorts. But with Conte, you just feel like, I didn't see it coming, but I'm going to trust it anyway. I'm going to go with it. And I feel like everyone around me was like, would never have expected Sanchez or Sessegnon to come on over people like Dele and Tanguy Ndombele, but this is the man we're going to trust, and I trust him. I would, you know, I don't care who he brings on, I trust it fully.
Yeah, while we're on the fullbacks, I did think, yeah, Emerson and Tanganga in that first half were like truly shocking together on the right hand side. And also, I watched Reguilon's post-match interview with Match of the Day 2 today. And like, what minute did he come off? It wasn't that late, was it? But he was absolutely still panting like way after the match finished when he was given his post-match interview. And I quite liked, I watched it all play out, the Reguilon sub, where there was a moment he went down sort of near their box briefly. And I watched Conte see him sort of stay on the ground. And it was very brief, but he immediately got his assistant to run over to where they were warming up and call Sessegnon back. And on Sessegnon, I mean, I think he'll probably start in the Europa Conference, but he was immediately getting into some really great positions. But the first thing he did was make a truly amazing run and then just smash the ball right across the box to absolutely no one. But you know, he's bound to be rusty. They've only just let him outside, obviously.
What a great cameo for him as well. I think, you know, to be trusted despite being out for so long, being such a ghost really around the place for what feels like years now, for Conte to show that little bit of faith in him to come on and sort of help see out such an important victory, you'd hope would be the shot in the arm that he needs, particularly as I think, you know, hopefully some of these guys are going to have to and will step up in the Europa Conference. And you know, it would be amazing if we can start looking to these sort of reserve players with a little more confidence than, you know, we certainly felt, you know, with Mourinho and Nuno, where both managers, it felt like very quickly decided, I can't trust anyone but, you know, the first team in this at all. Yeah, lovely to see Seth back. All right, well, that's pros, cons and some bar tips for any South standers from Tom there. Let's look a little bit forward now. We've got Mura away on Thursday night. They were one of the single worst teams I've ever seen pitch up at White Hart Lane for the home leg. I'm sure in the finest sort of UEFA, Europa Conference tradition will make the away match look incredibly difficult. We mentioned Sessegnon. I would love to see 90 minutes from Ndombele. Anyone else anyone's especially looking forward to in what Conte has already said will be a rotated team?
Yeah, I think we might. I know it's like we've almost forgotten that he exists, but Brian Hill, I really want to see him because it's kind of weird. He was sort of a real bright spot at a terribly boring season under Nuno, but then got injured. And since Conte came in, I don't think I've seen a single shot of him hardly at all. So I'd love to see him come in. I don't know what's going to happen with the striker. I'm guessing Kane's not going to play. So I don't know if that means Scarlett. Or I could imagine doing something weird, like putting Son up front or something. I don't know. I'm guessing, I don't know if Conte will go for Scarlett. Who knows? But I don't think Kane's going to play because I don't know if you saw that he ran the second most of any player on the pitch yesterday, so he's definitely not going to play out. I'd be very surprised if he starts.
I feel less worried about Kane after Sunday. I mean, I know he didn't score obviously again, but he, as Billy's just sort of pointed out, running numbers wise, he's clearly working that much harder now. He seems a bit sharper. I think that chance he missed really early on in the second half, it was a shame that didn't go in, but it feels like he's getting in positions again that he just simply wasn't. Part of me wonders if he will play Thursday because it is kind of a must win, isn't it? And I feel like he might rotate, you know, the wing backs and bring in Tongi, etc. But I wonder, because I mean, I think as we've seen from conference games before, if Son or Kane aren't playing, there's just no, you know, there's no route to goal for us. Tom, what do you reckon he'll do?
Well, I guess it's you're right. Kane did look better against Leeds, and he really put in a shift. He's still dropping too deep, and because we don't have another striker, with like there's still no one in those areas sometimes. But maybe it's a test for Delhi and Bergwijn. You know, we talked about Marine on the last podcast and how Berg couldn't score against Marine. Surely against Moura, he can do something. And yeah, the Ndombele thing's weird, isn't it? Because he didn't come on the other day, didn't come on against Leeds, and the final sub was obviously Delhi. So it's a big, like, if he does rotate, it's a big test for Delhi, Bergwijn, yes, Sessegnon, Doherty, who, as we were saying the other day, also played well for Ireland. And I think I didn't see it. I left the ground straight on the final whistle against Leeds, but people said Doherty also had a weird sort of embrace with Conte, right?
I think he looked, Bergwijn looked noticeably miffed. I think to my eyes, Doherty looked more sort of surprised by suddenly being kind of leapt on by Conte. So I'm going to give Doherty the benefit of the doubt. I'm really intrigued to see him because I feel like he'll definitely start a right wing back is my guess there. And it will be really intriguing to see if there is any positive impact from Conte being at the club and, you know, him being this sort of wing back whisperer. If Doherty can fulfill Billy's sort of speculative punt last week that he's going to somehow become Cafu. I mean, we'll win, right? I feel like, is anyone stressed about Thursday?
I do remember watching them in the home. No, they were shocking, weren't they? Like, you would hope it would be a really comfortable win. And I think a lot of these players have got a lot to prove. I think when you look at the subs that came on against Leeds, you'd imagine Delhi is sort of right at the back of the queue at the moment. I know he's literally the last sub that we had, but just don't really see him breaking into the team anytime soon, the Premier League team. I'd be very surprised if he gets that centre mid stop. And the way that Moore is playing, I can't see him replacing Moore either. So that's, again, it's such a weird situation, the Delhi situation. Is it like, what is the future for him at Tottenham? I can't really see it being fruitful. So again, it's another opportunity for him to prove himself. But, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with him in the coming years at Tottenham.
I wonder if he, I've seen a few people talk about this idea, but if perhaps he, you know, gets turned into a sort of conference striker, and that's not literally he plays in the conference in the fifth tier of English football, but maybe in a few years. But for us this season, he's, you know, Conte might try and work him into a sort of number nine type that you can just play up front against teams like Moura, and hopefully he grabs a few. But even that, I mean, every idea around Dele Alli at the moment just feels, I don't know, no one has much sort of hope, do they? It's very sad.
He's had so many chances, but like peak Dele, I'd be like, great, play him up front. He can hold the ball up, rest Son and Kane. But yeah, like you said, for a long, long time, those Europa Conference and Europa League games, we've looked so toothless without Son and Kane. And it's just crazy because we should be able to rest them against teams like Moura and not even have them travel, but I think they will have to travel, like you said, as it's a must win.
I mean, it's so bonkers that, not that we didn't keep Vinicius, but that, you know, he did have some worth early on in the season against, you know, the real Europa muck, if you like. And, you know, these are the fixtures we, like you say, Tom, we don't want Kane or Son to travel. And if you have got a sort of average striker, albeit, but one that you know is going to probably take a chance or two against a team like this, simply because he is 6 foot plus, knows how to play up front and isn't a child, like poor old Dane Scarlett, who I think has been sort of physically, you know, shown that he's not quite there yet so far in these matches. It's just insane. Hopefully put right in January.
Yeah, I do think one of the things that I think Nuno got wrong was his treatment of Dane Scarlett. He kind of chucked him in these conference games and he got absolutely no service in any of them. And it can't have been good for his confidence, like getting hooked for Harry Kane in these games. But you never know under Conte, you know, we have a better system, we have more creativity. He might get a chance and he might actually get some assists and service. It'd be interesting to see if it's handled differently under Conte, because I think Nuno struggled to know what to do with him, and I felt sorry for Scarlett in the Conference League, because, you know, we all want him to be the next youngster coming through, but at 17, I don't think the way that Nuno handled it is any benefit to him whatsoever. So maybe under Conte, we might see some differences there.
Feels a little churlish perhaps to look to Burnley when we've not yet played Moura, and who knows what might happen there. But I would assume, as we were saying earlier, Sanchez comes in for Tanganga. That's probably the only change I would imagine going into the Burnley game. I saw highlights of their game with Palace. I mean, the first two goals they scored were like the most Burnley goals imaginable. They were both sort of headers and sort of bullied Palace's defenders to score. And then Maxwell Cornet, their sort of exciting signing from Lyon, scored an absolutely gorgeous goal to level it up after half time. He seems like he's the danger man. So he plays on the left wing. So that'll be a tough assignment, I think, for Royale, who I think, Tom, you touched on, probably took a step back against Leeds. I think he'd been one of our better players for the last sort of three or four matches and looked really quite shaky at times. So I think that'll be tough for him. But, you know, we went to Burnley and won in the cup. Again, feeling confident, guys, for that one?
I just hate playing against Chris Wood. Like, I think he's, when you mentioned selling Vinicius, like, I would have loved to have signed Chris Wood as a backup striker to Harry Kane. I think the last time we played Burnley, I don't think he played, is that right? I think he was injured or something like that.
And
that
I think he came on maybe in the Carabao.
Something like that. And I just felt like when I saw the team and he wasn't playing, I felt relieved. Like, so I'm guessing he scored at the weekend, didn't he? I'm guessing he'll start on Sunday. It should be a game that we go and win. I think we've got a really good run of fixtures now, between now and the Liverpool game. Hopefully you could see, you know, if we want to be anything like getting towards the top four, we need to win in all of these games that we've got coming up. Especially as for the first time in what feels like since we started this podcast, West Ham actually lost a game of football, which I'm sure Tom is delighted about.
God, I'm over the moon. And they've now got a really tough run of fixtures, haven't they? And I think, Moyes was saying, like, you know, we're not the finished article, you know, we're going to lose some games like that. I'm over the moon that West Ham lost. Also on Burnley, like, they conceded 3 to Palace. So I think you'd hope if we play with anything like the intensity that we did in the second half against Leeds, then we should be able to score a couple against them at least. And hopefully Son and Kane get on the score sheet, you know, because they really, really need it at this point, don't they? Both of them.
Big time. Sadly, we didn't escape some West Ham pain this weekend, as Spurs women lost to West Ham. Rosa unfortunately can't make tonight, and we were all at the stadium for the men's game. So I don't think any of us managed to catch an awful lot, we'll be completely honest there. But yeah, it seemed like a really disappointing result. And Kit Graham, who I think most of our good players gone through so far this season, came off with quite a worrying looking injury. So that's it's a bit of a concern. But I have every faith that we will bounce back. That's Tottenham covered. We should move on to culture, guys. We're without Rosa, who normally drags the levels of culture up to something approaching admirable, but let's do our best. Billy, what's your pick this week?
Yeah, I've gone from an EP from a producer called Logic 1000, who I think is an Australian producer. She has had a really good year. She's really productive. She's got loads of really good EPs and releases over the last year or so. I came onto her because I know that Fortet started playing one of our tracks that released last year, but since then she's had a string of amazing like club music that she's produced. This new one is called In the Sweetness of You. I think it's got 5 tracks on it, and they're all kind of various different UK subgenres in there. There's a little bit of UK funky in there, there's a little bit of house in there, and there's just some classic UK sounding club music. I think she's definitely a producer to watch. She's an incredible DJ as well. So my culture pick is the new Logic 1000 EP, In the Sweetness of You.
I'm not sure if everyone's noticed, but I feel like Billy is probably slowly building his dream kind of lineup for what will eventually become the Hometown Glory Club Night in a Tottenham venue coming soon to you. So this is Billy's very unsubtle way of putting feelers out, I think, to his dream DJs.
And of course it will be headlined by DJ EZ, of course.
Tottenham of Zion. Course. Absolutely. Him and Norman Jay, headliners. Tom, what's yours?
Well, I feel disappointed this week that I don't have loads of culture recommendations, because usually if you've got more than one, you get this sort of death stare from Rosa on our Zoom call as you just reel them out. But actually, over the weekend, I was obviously at Spurs and didn't watch a lot of TV. The Wheel, Saturday night game show, The Wheel, is excellent, comes after Strictly.
Is that the Gary Lineker one?
No, it's Michael McIntyre.
Oh, that one, okay.
And the most recent episode had like Big Nasty and Claudia Winkleman and Debbie McGee. Honestly, it's just a really, I don't even like Saturday night game shows particularly, but that the format of that is really good. But again, I'm going to like just mention that as my sort of lowbrow pick. And then I wanted to recommend an album that came out on Soul Jazz Records a couple of months ago, and it's called Fire Over Babylon, and it's a compilation of reggae that was put out on Studio One originally, and it's a Soul Jazz re-release. It's mostly sort of 70s, I think it's all 70s and maybe early 80s reggae, but it's kind of the subtitle, it's called Fire Over Babylon, and then the subtitle is Dread, Peace and Conscious Sounds at Studio One. So it's kind of the conscious kind of political end of reggae, really. In terms of artists that I know who are on the record, there's only really Horace Andy, who has an amazing voice and obviously sung with Massive Attack quite a lot. But yeah, I got it on vinyl and then obviously realised it was streaming and I didn't need to kind of shell out for it. But it's a lovely vinyl and it's also streaming. And it's called Fire Over Babylon, just so much great reggae on there. And after Lee Scratch Perry died, I went off on this sort of reggae tangent, read a few obituaries of his and kind of then started listening to a lot of dub and reggae. And yeah, this compilation is so, so good, as are most of the compilations that Soul Jazz put out.
Very good recommendations, guys. Very good. I'm going to pick a documentary that my wife and I chanced upon last Friday night on BBC Two. It was on the artist Bridget Riley. The documentary is called Painting the Line. Bridget Riley was someone who I feel like when I started university and realised that I needed to sort of get into art if I was going to be able to hold any sort of conversations with girls doing art history that I really fancied. She was one of like my go-to artists that I suddenly got very into and would, you know, pretend like I knew a lot more about. So it was nice to remember that I've always been this pretentious, and that's sort of something that started from many moons ago now. Also just learning a bit about her, she seems incredibly cool, even sort of into her 90s, a real visionary, one of our greatest living painters, I reckon. So if you get yourself onto iPlayer, that was a nice sort of mindful, relaxing sort of hour-long treat that I would thoroughly enjoy. And then music-wise, because I'm going to get a couple of music ones in as well, whilst Rose is not here to tutter us. I was trying to think of some albums I've enjoyed. I like the new Damon Albarn album. Again, it's nothing particularly exciting happens on it, but it's just a nice thing to sort of have on. And I feel like I've really lent into, you know, working from home so much. Having music to have on in the house is definitely something I value, perhaps more highly than I used to. And I love the Summer Walker record, still over it as well. I would thoroughly recommend that. I think she's terrific. Those are my picks. Those were your picks. That's Hometown Glory, episode 7. Thanks very much for listening. Apologies for the depleted crew tonight, but hopefully Tom, Billy and myself have kept you entertained and still euphoric after 45 minutes of Spurs kicking footballs directly at goal successfully. Billy, see us home.
Yeah, and just before I do, actually, at half time against Leeds was the first time I've not been in the I felt, I've just felt so flat after the terrible first half that I didn't go to the concourse for like the first time in about 5 or 6 years. And we didn't even have anyone to replace Paul Quite. Like, there's just no one. Nothing even happens at half time now. I didn't know what was going on. So got to bring him back and up the Spurs.
Yes, I'm excited for Beyonce's next album. Are you mad?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.